Welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick, and my co-host is Chris Lucian, and we are really excited to have Chris Galavan and James Simon joining us today. Some great participants in the mob programming community. So really looking forward to this. And looks like we'll be hitting some topics, mobbing for the first time during COVID, building the developer community, and then also working with Woody. So this should be fun. So to get us started, Chris, can you introduce yourself first and then James afterwards?
Sure. I'm Chris Galavan. I've been an IT person for a number of years. In 2018, I found my way into DevOps. I actually was asked by my boss to speak at the DevOps Summit. I didn't know much about DevOps, which is funny that I spoke at the summit. But I had my mind blown when I met the community, but I think more importantly, when I left the summit, I was kind of embraced by the community, and I learned everything I know from people who were willing to share with me. So, I think we'll talk about mobbing later, but really I was kind of born out of the sharing that exists in the community. I'll turn it over to James.
Yeah, my name's James Simon. I'm a solutions architect and sometime developer. For about the last 6 years, I've been working in the automotive industry and getting frustrated by the sort of speed at which things happen, right? And trying to look for better ways to accelerate with quality. Wound up having a conversation with my director about the book Accelerate. Read that and dove right in. At some point, I connected with Chris. And that's where this whole journey really got moving for me.
Awesome. Well, I guess to get us started, let's jump into the first topic. So mobbing for the first time during COVID, please share your story.
So I'll go ahead and kick it off, and then I'll let James maybe pick up where he joined the saga. So I run a DevOps dojo, and we had been doing in-person dojos for several months. And like any large company, we had kind of worked ourselves away from working together. So we had gotten into working in our cubes and, you know, working on our silos. And this concept of doing DevOps dojos and actually sitting down in person with people was some big novel thing that really, you know, made things a lot better, which is funny. It's like we had forgotten how to work together. And we were having a lot of success. We were in a small room, you know, with 40 people at one point in time, just buzzing with activity. We had walls full of team journeys, and you could come into the room and do a tour, and you could understand, you know, instantly where this team was and how they got there. We even did a tour of our little dojo with the U.S. government. We had some generals come through and take a look. And we're making a lot of progress. And then it was a Thursday and we were sent home, and all of a sudden we're at home. And one of the things we had to sort of challenge ourselves with in a very short amount of time is, how do we take this experience that we were giving teams and really make it real in a remote way? And we were really big on that experience. So we spent a lot of time thinking about that and scratching our heads. And we started our first remote dojo the week after we were sent home. And that was where we first learned about mobbing. I remember the first day of that dojo, this guy showed up. His name was Woody. And we were using Zoom, and he just kind of showed up and he just kind of listened. He didn't say much. At first, I wondered, you know, why is this guy even here? He just kind of sat there, didn't say much. And over time, he wound up introducing mobbing to us. And we'll talk more about what that means. But It was something that snuck up on us. We didn't anticipate it having the impact on us that it did. And I really think that mobbing and remote, for us, what it did is it made the experience real. It actually made it in many ways better than it was in person. So it kind of felt like a missing piece that we discovered during our dojo. And James joined in week three of that dojo. So maybe James, you can start talking a little bit about how you joined and what it meant to you.
Yeah, sure. I had been on a bit of a journey already. I had not had a chance to join any of the dojos that Chris did when we were at the office, but I would just sit and be a fly on the wall sometimes, and I would talk to Chris a lot. I started working my way through some of the external communities, joining events that were put on by the Dojo Consortium and a couple other groups, and then worked with Joel Norman to to start up Canton Coders. And I did some of those events before I joined Chris. So I was familiar with mob programming because that's mainly what those events are around. So my boss came to me and asked, hey, you know, he said, Chris is working on this sort of self-service pipeline. And I want you to join his team in doing that and just see if we can come up with something that'll work for our group. So I said, yeah, sure, that sounds great. And I cleared out, you know, about 6 hours of my day every day and joined the first meeting with Chris. And of course, it was all virtual at that point. You know, we'd already gone remote because of COVID. And I was, honestly, I was pretty skeptical how this thing that I had seen them doing on whiteboards and you know, with sticky notes and paper was going to translate to a group work effort on a 6 hour long Zoom call. It just seemed like this is not going to go well. And there were certainly some lessons to learn, and you know, maybe we'll get into more of those details. But immediately, the thing that struck me was that I felt safe, right? Because I'm not full-time in development, and I've always been stronger in scripting languages than anything else, just due to the nature of the work that I've done, which is middleware. A lot of it was low code, scripting, XML. So this was going to be a pipeline, right? And I was a little concerned about my ability to kind of hang in. But I just felt safe right away. The transition of navigator to driver, the way that it was constructed under Woody's tutelage, it just, you have this group of people that if one of you doesn't know something, somebody else does. Or you go do the research that you would normally do on Stack Overflow, but you do it kind of collectively and together. And what was this, besides the safety, the most profound thing for me ultimately with the experience was the ability to have a team camaraderie, to really become a team with a group of guys in a remote only setting, right? And still be able to have that sort of shorthand with everyone and have it all fluid and dynamic and working well. And then the learning, going from knowing almost nothing about infrastructure as code, about Groovy, you know, about sort of the nuts and bolts of CI/CD period, to being very comfortable with it in 6 weeks, right, was just staggering. And we wound up keeping it going even once the MVP was released. And we still worked together every day for a long time until I got swallowed back up by my role. As the year went on and we got closer to launch time, I had to step away a little bit. But it's still going strong, right, with the core group of people that were there. And it just blows my mind. I don't understand now, as I look back, why mob programming isn't more popular, right? The ability to put out a product and with a good quality in a short amount of time, sort of collectively doing code reviews and collectively learning, it just seems like the most amazing formula that I've ever encountered. So that's my experience. I guess you can tell I'm pretty excited by it, right? So
yeah, well, you're on the right show. So yeah, we talk about it all day long. So this is a good place for you.
Why are you on the solo development podcast?
I think it's it actually, every team that I've ever worked with in a dojo usually has some sort of storyline, you know. And a lot of times they kind of look the same. The first couple of weeks are kind of slow. They're trying to learn new things. They're trying to learn how to work together. And that was true with this team. Of course, we were in the COVID, and we were remote, which is a whole nother level of complexity and, you know, things to deal with. But what I noticed about this particular one is that towards the end of the dojo, there was a really rapid increase in output, not output, but outcome, rapid increase in outcome and sort of happiness with the team. The team was starting to say things like, well, we don't want to do breakout sessions anymore. We want to just stay here and mob together. And then I remember, you know, at the end of every dojo, we do a retro. And I remember some of the words the team said. And one thing one of the guys said just really killed me. In fact, I kind of teared up a little bit. He said that It had given him joy again at work. And I used to have this title on my LinkedIn that said builder of teams, because that's what I was really trying to be. And then I changed it to builder of joy, because it struck me that what I thought I was doing was really not what I was doing. I was really there to try to bring joy to people's lives and, you know, make their lives better. And I really think, you know, just realistically working with Woody and my programming, it totally snuck up on us. I mean, in a 6-week dojo, I would say that it took us to about week 4 or 5 before we realized the impact this had made on us. And I think James alluded to it. When we ended the dojo, the next morning, there was a meeting put on the calendar at 7 a.m., which is before work starts here. And it's still on the calendar. And people were doing stuff like, they were saying, well, I know I have to work between these hours, but I want a mob before work starts. That was the kind of impact it had on people. We were mobbing outside of work hours just because we like to do it. Just a really positive human story, something that emerged in COVID that I would have never imagined. I would have never imagined that would have come out of that. So,
you know, it's interesting because I don't think we spend a lot of time talking too much about the camaraderie, I think it was what you had said. And so it kind of naturally happens organically for a team. And you'd think that it'd be maybe less prevalent when remote or something like that. But I think I've experienced the opposite. So like when you're doing that, when you did the dojo, did that, you know, it sounds like it kind of came out of the dojo and then people were kind of doing it in the day to day. Were those teams more in sync with each other? Were you able to mob more often than work solo, even outside of the dojo? How did that translate toward the end there?
So the team was, the makeup of this particular team was one where when we came into the dojo, the work had all been outsourced. Mm-hmm. So all the knowledge was in a service provider's head. And when we left the dojo, 50% of the code had been written by employees who hadn't written any code in 20 years, me being one of them. So that dynamic occurred. And then when we left the dojo, some of the folks were saying, okay, well, we're going to go back to our normal, you know, way of working. And I was like, no, we're going to do this mobbing. At first, I think I kind of overdid it. So I had mobbing every day, all day. And I realized that was not something that worked for everyone. So then I found this, I kind of tweaked the schedule and I got it to this point where it doesn't happen every day and there's breaks at certain points so they can do other things where they need to deal with folks maybe that are offshore. You know, they need to have a lunch at a certain time, things like that. So we found a way to still maintain enough to have the camaraderie and the, you know, the outcome, and but then enough time to do, you know, maybe some other things.
Yeah, another amazing thing though, Chris, that came out of that was Caleb, one of the team members, his group in our organization sponsored this particular dojo because they wanted it to be a lot easier for their developers to stand up infrastructure and deploy code to it. So he took the mob programming back to his actual team, which is our after sales group. And now I think to this day, they mob the difficult, right? The things that are sort of context, they just do the way that they've always done it. But then as soon as somebody sort of encounters a controversy or a difficult challenge, they get together and they mob it, which I thought was pretty amazing. And I took the ideas back to my group where we're in a transition period. We actually write very little of our code. We mostly specify, mm-hmm. right? But we had been specifying in very distant siloed groups. And I had already been kind of trying to get people to collaborate more. I turned it into an urgency when I got back, because I just saw, even if you're not writing a single line of code, you're talking about product thinking, right? Product development. Mm-hmm. Having all of the people that are going to have the hands on the work and the stakeholders together really significantly reduces risk and makes it more enjoyable, right? When you don't receive something that somebody's been working on for a month and go, oh my God, what was this person thinking? You know, when you can actually make the challenges and the adjustments right there and then. And it's had a very big impact on our group already. And we're looking at now putting together full-on product teams that do their own development as well. So I think a lot came out of that particular dojo that spread around. And the core people, Chris's team, are still there. They're still mobbing for the most part. I think we really saw the value of it in a really big way.
It's fantastic. And I think even when you're, you know, mobbing is a activity that doesn't necessarily need to be code, right? And so having the specifier, product owner, person with expertise and the customer value and that kind of thing in the mob is so incredibly valuable. Even if you're not necessarily writing a high-level programming language or a low-level one, there's so much value there. And then there's something you said, Chris, about mobbing and joy that really struck a chord. So that's been a big thing for me as well. And actually, I was on a podcast, I'll put in the show link, where that was the topic, mobbing and joy, because I think in traditional ways of working where there was kind of more team-oriented stuff, it like got close. It was like close to being on a sports team, right? But it was still like, I go work by myself a lot of the time. But then that camaraderie of working together often or all the time, and the friendships and the fun and the effectiveness and how much we get done. It just, there's so many human things that I think like kick off endorphins or something, right? That makes it just a really fun, enjoyable experience that I think in turn increases productivity, you know? So it plays a part in it. I had one follow-up question, and that was, you guys kept mentioning dojo. So you did dojos before, but without mobbing. And then you started doing dojos with mobbing. What was dojos like without mobbing? Because I think in my limited context, I've only heard it in the context of mobbing, like what a dojo was. So maybe that would help educate me.
So I was thinking about this today. We were actually mobbing before, but we just didn't call it mobbing. And I just don't think we knew really what we were doing. We didn't have a name for it. We were passing computers around and solving problems together, but we weren't calling it mobbing. And I think we were missing some of the elements of it, like intentional breaks, sustainable pace. There's a lot of things that Woody introduced that we weren't doing, which made it more easy. And I think that it's easier to do remotely than it was in person. It actually lends itself more to a remote scenario from what I could see.
Yeah, and I think you hit on, and it's kind of the next topic, right? So it's a good transition to the discipline that Woody brought to it is what made it mob programming. I observed some of what Chris and them were doing, and you could call it mob programming, maybe closer to pair with observers, mm-hmm. right? Some of that had to do with the availability of developers. Chris and I decided when we did Apollo 13 that everybody's a developer. If you're on the call, you know, or if you're in the room, you're gonna put some hands on the keyboard. It didn't matter if you were an L2, which is like a lower level executive for us, or if you're a tester or what, you're putting hands on the keyboard if you're in the call with us, right? Everybody got a chance to be a navigator and a driver, and nobody was excused. And I think that there was value to that. I think I'm one of these guys that spent a number of years away from the work. When I got back to the work, I realized that some of the choices that I made put developers in a lot of pain, right? And it forced me to start thinking differently about the architectures that I was designing and the specifications for APIs that I was writing, and start to really take microservices seriously and understand it better.
Okay. Oh, that's great. So I guess it was collaborative work, multiple people in a room, remote or not, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so people pairing and some people were observing the pairs, but there wasn't like a rotation amongst more than two people, I'm guessing is kind of what I'm imagining in a dojo.
Yeah, maybe there was a couple of main people doing the coding and others were watching.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you. That heles that helps a lot.
Earlier, you mentioned some of the difficulties and maybe the transition, you know, kind of going back a topic a little bit. I guess, like, what were the you know, I think a lot of people like to hear what were the difficulties and then how were they overcome. And so when you're talking about just, you know, in the transition, you had to, you know, to deal with, you know, transitioning to remote at the same time as transitioning to mobbing. What were some of those challenges and how did you overcome them?
So we were really big on low tech. So we were, you know, we were using markers and we were using pieces of paper and not much else. And we really were stubborn that we didn't want to go to some digital type of thing. So we were doing these little experiments. We actually at one point did this experiment, this guy, Bill Allen, who we were working with. He was doing a Jeff Patton trick where he took a camera and he kind of put it on a piece of wood and he extended it over his desk. And then he was drawing on this thing with this piece of paper. He was drawing a builder's, banker's, buyer's little Venn diagram. And honestly, when he did it, I could smell the marker. I don't know that it was, I think my brain just was so used to smelling markers that I could smell the marker.
That's pretty cool.
It was like a huge moment for us. We've done it. You know, we've reproduced the dojo in a remote form. I think we experimented with a lot with tools and we probably gave tools a little bit too much credit. We were looking for a live mobbing tool, like a VS Code with whatever that's called.
The shared files.
We could never get that to work through our firewall. So that didn't work out. What we wound up doing is, I think what I found to be most effective there was just to use GitHub's web client. Because honestly, the changes are all very simple and small and short in nature. You really don't need some heavy IDE to.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Kind of overkill, I felt like. And we did have a lot of problems switching drivers and navigators because, you know, like I'm a guy that hasn't coded in 20 years. So, of course, my desktop's not, you know, set up to be a developer. A lot of times it would come to me and it would take like 2 hours to overcome a setup issue. So, we had some of these kind of startup issues that we had to deal with. I remember we did a team charter. We were super nervous, you know, about how this would go. Cause this was our livelihood. This is what we do. And we were worried about it being shut down. I remember things were going bad and there was like technical difficulties we were having in this charter. And then at some point somebody asked the team what hurts. And then all of a sudden the team started opening up and that's like a great question when you ask somebody what hurts. They started talking about all the things that hurt and it kind of saved the whole day. And then we just got enough confidence that we just started to, you know, iterate, repeat, get better. I think Mural was a big thing. I don't think that helped us in the dojo, but it has helped us now. That's made up a huge part of the gap between this physical dojo room and in a remote.
Yeah, I think we experimented with cardboard IT, Jamboard, you know, we tried all kinds of things. I think ultimately cardboard IT started working well enough, but we realized right near the end of the dojo that Mural probably was going to be better. But what happened was we encountered all these roadblocks of the firewall. You got to do the VPN hokey pokey on and off, right? How do you pass the code so that the navigator and driver can, you know, can switch quickly? GitHub check-in. When it was complex, we would still use like VS Code or something. But if it was simple, then Chris is right. We would just make the changes right there in the web UI for GitHub. So, you know, that it's just a matter of iterating and finding out what works for your team. And I don't even know if the things that worked for us would work for everybody. But we identified roadblocks and we either quickly found a way around them or we did get some coverage from executives. So Chris would sometimes just write somebody and say, look, we can't have this and be productive. Can you get this roadblock out of my way? Right. And we were really successful actually, probably at about 50% of those, getting them to actually just remove the roadblock right away. Other ones they agreed to way back then and still haven't been finished. but at least they agreed to it, right? You know, so it really does make a difference, I think, to have a change backlog in a plan for how you're going to address the changes that you need that are causing the team pain. Is that sort of became the motto, right, of the mobbing itself for our own team and then the product that we were building for others is we just wanted to make developers' lives better, right, at our organization. And we felt if anything that we did within that dojo that achieved that result was a positive outcome. And that's kind of how we approached it.
Fantastic. Well, that might be a good bridge to the next topic, which is building the developer community. So making developers' lives better. So yeah, if you guys want to jump in on that one, tell us what you're thinking.
So at some point we came up with this idea, and I think it was based on what we saw Joel Norman do with his Canton Coders community, is why don't we build an internal community of developers, one where we can have conversations, where we can host events, where we can do katas. And we built one. And I mean, we honestly didn't have a chat tool until in the middle of COVID. So we got a chat tool, built a channel for this community. And then we started hosting events. We did we did this thing called Kata Fridays. On Fridays, James and I and some other guest coaches come in and teach katas to folks. A lot of that is mobbing. A lot of it is, you know, like TDD mobbing using Cyber Dojo. And at first we didn't really know what would happen, but along the way, I think we did it in 2020, we did over 20 of these. We had a consistent audience on Friday afternoons for 2 hours of at least 20 people in every session, which is pretty amazing, actually. We had executives who hadn't coded in years join us for a number of sessions and code with us, and they were actually quite effective, which I thought was a very interesting way to lead. You know, I think that was an amazing way to lead to these folks. We pulled katas sort of out of the blue. Like, we did a functional program in kata. None of us knew anything about it. We kind of proved that if none of us know anything about the topic, as long as there's enough of us there, we can find a way to make it work. That's kind of what we proved in 2020 with these katas.
That was my favorite story, actually. That was one that was proposed by the director that joined us, who hadn't coded in forever. He wanted to know about functional programming. He suggested we do the Berlin clock in TypeScript. And none of us knew TypeScript. None of us had ever done the Berlin clock before. And none of us knew functional programming. So it wound up being, I think, three total Fridays. We did it across three Fridays, and the first one was a total disaster. Except in that we learned quite a bit, right, about both functional programming and TypeScript. Yeah. So it was really, really fun. And he was so interested that he went off and solved it ultimately in a different way than we would. In between the first and second one on the weekend. Yeah. And he sent it to us, and we just didn't look at it so that it didn't poison what we were trying to do. But he was so into it that he writes, you know, TypeScript code pretty frequently, and he joins a lot of the Kata Fridays, which has just been amazing for building a community in talking to people that we might never have spoken to before, right? Yeah. Like, there's a team in Mexico that I'd never had any contact with, and now I talk to quite regularly. They attend our Friday sessions quite a bit. You know, people from other parts of the company that we would normally have no reason to talk to. And this all happens to coincide with the fact that we're trying to break down all of the silos across all the different businesses, right? And start working together. So the forming of this community just came at a really opportune time. And it's an active channel that people put goofy stuff in. They put questions in about technology stacks, problems that they're trying to solve and they're having a hard time with. And it's not exactly reached this epic level like Stack Overflow yet or anything, but there is probably there's like 200 people in it altogether. There's probably a core group of about 30 or 40 people that are constantly chatting. So this all spawned from, I got involved with Canton Coders with Joel Norman after I was involved with the dojo, because for all the reading that I do and classes that I take and work that I do, I've probably learned more just hanging around in the communities than any of that combined, right? I just learning from people like, I think you guys have recently interviewed Brian Finster, you know, Woody, Camille Bell, who helped us out with the early Kata Fridays. They're people that have their, you know, their sleeves rolled up, and they're doing the work. They've encountered the problems. They can, you know, either prevent you from hitting a wall or just let you know that it's coming up, right? Sometimes there's nothing they can do about it, but the foreknowledge is helpful. And so I've really learned a lot from that. So that's why I wanted to build the community. I really do believe that communities of practice are very valuable.
Absolutely. I think that's a big motivation even for this podcast and as well as a number of other communities that I've been a part of. I think that's a fantastic thing. Open spaces and conferences and internal, you know, development communities. It's really fantastic.
Sort of thing. Yeah. One thing that jumped out to me, what you guys said, and it's come up in a couple different threads throughout this whole conversation, is people who haven't coded or who haven't coded for a while joining the mob. And I guess, what are things, if you felt yourself in those shoes, that helped you have the courage to do it, or what are things you've done to help make it easier for people to do that? Because I've seen sometimes people jump in, and then some people at times are hesitant, like, oh, I'll just watch the mob. I don't feel like I'm qualified to be here, kind of thing.
We definitely have those people, and the only thing you can do is continue to encourage them and demonstrate that it's a safe space. But we definitely have people that have come to every single Kata Friday and have not joined in the mob once, right? They've just observed. But I think for me, it's like I said at the beginning, there's this immediate, for me, sense of safety, right? Like, it's okay if I don't know. And if I don't know, it's not like we're all stuck, right? I'm not leading this. I don't have to be the one that knows, right? There's a group of people around me that also should or probably do know. And it has occasionally come up where nobody knew, and we just hit Stack Overflow, right? and that happened with the TypeScript. We honestly had to do a lot of research because nobody knew it, you know, mostly around, you know, the syntax of it. But I think it lends itself towards safety as long as you're demonstrating that, right? And I've participated in a couple mobs where it hasn't necessarily seemed so safe, but as long as you have a good facilitator that's enforcing that blamelessness, that safety, then I think it just, if people observe enough, they should get comfortable.
I think it's person dependent. I think that I've noticed that certain people have personalities that lend themselves to just kind of putting themselves on the edge and trying something that they've never tried before. Other people, it takes time to get there. Some people never actually seem to want to do that. So I don't think there's any real secret. I think maybe just doing it over and over and making it safe, and you'll get the willing. I guess maybe you don't need to reach everyone. You just kind of need to reach the willing.
Yeah.
We found a lot of willing.
Yeah, that's great. And I think there's a lot of value to people being on the edge of the mob as well. Like, because they'll be compelled to speak at some point, I've noticed, when they see something. and then that can be very valuable and helpful. Cool. Chris, did you have anything else on that before we jump to the last topic?
Yeah, let's head over to the last topic.
We can go right.
Oh, what was that, Chris? I'm sorry.
we can go to the next topic.
Awesome. So working with Woody. So how was that for both of you?
So we found our way to Woody through a guy named Joel Tosi. I don't know if you guys, do you know Joel? I'm not sure if you know him.
Maybe.
He's kind of a unicorn coach that kind of does just about everything. He wrote a book about dojos. You can look him up. Anyhow, he brought Woody in, and I really didn't know why. And I think he just was maybe seeing the linkage between mobbing and remote work before I was. And like I said, initially Woody didn't say much. And then at some point, I think in week one, he gave us an overview of what mobbing is. He pulled out a deck and he gave me the deck. And he talked kind of about why it was and how it was. And everyone was excited about it. We got started working in it. And again, he didn't say that much, but he was very into the human side. He wasn't so much worried about the technology or about the coding or anything like that. He was more interested in, are we doing this in a way that's making it safe? Are we taking breaks? Are we retroing frequently enough so we can talk about what felt good, what didn't feel good? He was new to dojo, so he hadn't spent a lot of time in dojo. So he was trying to learn dojos and trying to figure out, when do I how do I fit into this? And he kind of figured it out at some point. He said a lot of things that I didn't understand at first. And then when I looked back at him later, I was just blown away by how cool it was what he said. Joel Tosi was sitting next to me and pinging me on Slack all the time. And every time Woody would say something, he's like, oh my God, I can't believe what he just said. He really is a great human with a lot of insight into this. Isn't just something he stumbled upon. He must have really put a lot of thought into this, because it's quite a deep, impactful thing. At the very end, I would say that everyone, when Woody left, everyone was really sad to see him go, and we gave him a send off, and the level of appreciation we had for him was really high.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, Chris, you were there with him when you both discovered mobbing, right?
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I can relate to all of that. You know, I worked with Woody for about 4 years, and in that time, you know, we got to know each other very well, and I think that, you know, his insights and the amount of the number of quotes he has from all these different places, and then all of these ideas that he draws from his earlier experiences, and then just the level of understanding and willingness to provide space and also listen, is a really cool thing. And so, you know, I'm glad to see that he has been able to kind of go from company to company, bringing that all over. And I think it's a really strong thing for people to do. And I'm also glad that mobbing as a practice has kind of been spreading, and he's been working to move that forward, because I think that that's been, it's something that, you know, I think earlier in my career, I think before we were mobbing, I had witnessed a lot of pain in software development. And I think that it's a space that if we could push that enough, then I think that a lot of that, a lot of the negative things about the software development as an industry, those things kind of erode away and evaporate away as people mob more. And so I think that that's been a really cool thing to see. So I'm glad to see him out there, and it's a lot of fun working with him too. Yeah.
And I'll throw in, it's okay to not understand right away. So what you're saying, Chris, where he would say something, you're like, I'm not sure what's going on. And so it's like, it's that feeling where it's like, I think I learned something, I'm confused and I'm intrigued. Right. And that's an okay space to be, right? Cause then it gets you asking questions and digging deeper, and it's okay to be there. And it becomes clear the more you go. Starting to sound very Jedi-ish or something.
the work shows you the path.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, I guess we might be hitting our time box. So I guess we'll go to Chris and James. Anything you'd like to share, plug, before we close out this episode?
I'll never go back. Go ahead, James.
I was just going to say, if you have the opportunity to try mob programming where you work, in particular, if you have any opportunity to try it with Woody Zuhl, do it. It really is perspective, and at least work life changing, right? And I think I'd like to see more of it where I am, and I will definitely encourage it.
Awesome. How about you, Chris?
I was just going to say, I don't think I'll ever be able to work any other way. So I think there's good and bad. As long as this exists, I'm good.
Yep. Same thing happened to me, and I had to find a way to work that way all the time. So yeah.
So maybe this is a good place for me to say that on my blog, I do maintain a list of like publicly declared mobbing companies that mob. And so maybe people can go and check that out too. Just to, you know, if you're looking to mob and you can't mob where you are, then there are places that mob.
Nice. Cool. Awesome. So with that, please like and subscribe. Please give us feedback. We love hearing your feedback about what you're liking, what you're not liking, you know, new topics people to have on the show, ways to make the show better. We love hearing it all on Twitter, YouTube, and more. And until next time, wob well and have a good one. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
So thank you.